based in Ontario. The show is all-inclusive. I only play music that I love and think that you'll love too. So tune in every Tuesday morning from 10 a.m. to noon right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
This is Democracy Now!
The Debt Collective is calling on President Biden to cancel student debt for millions of borrowers before he leaves office on January 20th. And even though he's gotten pushback from the right wing and from the Supreme Court, he still has the ability to do this.
As President Biden enters his final month in office, we'll speak with Astra Taylor of the Debt Collective about how Biden could still deliver debt relief to millions of student borrowers before Donald Trump takes office. Plus, cash for kids.
This was a huge mistake by President Biden to grant clemency to reduce the sentence for Michael Conahan, the former judge from Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, who was one of the two judges involved in that really heinous Kids for Cash scandal.
We'll look at Biden's controversial commutation that's been criticized by everyone from Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro to families whose lives were destroyed by the scandal. We'll speak to a mother whose son died by suicide after he was jailed at a for-profit prison that the judge took kickbacks from. We'll also speak to the director of the documentary Cash for Kids. Then, The Bibi Files, a new film about Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's corruption cases is being blocked from being shown in Israel. We'll speak to the film's producer, Alex Gibney, who obtained leaked recordings of Israeli police questioning Netanyahu, his wife Sarah, and others.
We must find a way to reward him.
What do you need to reward the Prime Minister for?
Government officials are not allowed to take gifts. This is corruption.
Alex Gibney is now making a film about Luigi Mangione and the shooting of the United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, Israeli troops backed by armed drones have attacked the Al-Mawasi refugee camp, which Israel had designated as a so-called humanitarian safe zone. Elsewhere, Israeli strikes have killed at least 10 people in Gaza City, while in northern Gaza, Israel's once again targeted the Kamal Adwan Hospital, knocking out the hospital's power generators, deploying explosive robots, and planting booby traps around the hospital grounds. The head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, condemned Israel's assault, writing, quote, "Recent attacks have further damaged the oxygen supply generators and broken windows and doors of the patients' rooms. The conditions in the hospital are simply appalling. We urge for the protection of health care and for this hell to stop. Ceasefire," the head of WHO said. Here in the United States, the family of Ayşenur Ezgi Aygi, the 26-year-old Turkish-American activist who was shot dead by Israeli troops in the occupied West Bank in September, is criticizing Secretary of State Antony Blinken after talks at the State Department Monday. Family members have been demanding the U.S. launch an independent investigation into Aygi's killing, but said they left the meeting disappointed and with doubts that they will ever receive justice. Aygi, a recent graduate of the University of Washington, was shot and killed by Israeli soldiers after taking part in a weekly protest against illegal Israeli settlements in the town of Beita. Witnesses say she was fatally shot in the head by an Israeli sniper after the demonstration had already dispersed. On Monday evening, Michigan Congressmember Rashida Tlaib rallied with her family and supporters in a protest outside the White House.
We all know that Ashner's murder was not a tragic error, as the president shamefully called it. It was devastating, I think, for her family to hear them say that. But we know that, and she knew, that what the Israeli military did to her, they do to Palestinians every single day.
Israel says it's closing its embassy in Ireland over Dublin's recognition of Palestinian statehood and its backing of the South Africa genocide case against Israel at the World Court. On Monday, the Irish Prime Minister, Simon Harris, responded to the news.
You're all here today asking about Ireland's position. What about Israel's actions? What about what Netanyahu is doing to the innocent children of Gaza? This is the diplomacy of destruction. And I think it is deeply regrettable that they took that decision. They have every right to take that decision to close the embassy. I'd rather it didn't happen. We will continue to engage diplomatically. But nobody's going to silence Ireland.
Senior U.S. officials say Turkey's building up its forces along the Turkish border with Syria in possible preparation for a large-scale incursion into territory held by U.S.-backed Syrian Kurds. That's according to the Wall Street Journal, which reports a Kurdish invasion could be imminent near Kobani, a Kurdish-majority city in Syria. Meanwhile, Syria's ousted authoritarian president has made his first statement since he fled to Russia to seek political asylum. In a post on the Syrian presidency's Telegram channel, it looks like Bashar al-Assad is writing that his departure from Syria was not planned and argued that Syria has, quote, fallen into the hands of terrorism, unquote. This comes as human rights groups are warning mass graves across Syria could contain the bodies of more than 100,000 victims of Bashar al-Assad and his father Hafez. One such site is in the Tadamon district of Damascus, where researchers are scrambling to examine evidence of widespread extrajudicial killings, including mass executions. Hiba Zayadeen is Syria researcher at Human Rights Watch.
We found human remains, bones, part of a skull, fingers, ribs strewn around the entire area surrounding the mass grave, which shows that really, you know, a lot more happened here than what we already knew. What happened in Tadamon here is just one of many others that are being, you know, found out across the country. And so it is really urgent that at this time, where we can see that there's quite a bit of chaos, given this transition, that there needs to be quick, urgent securing of all of these areas so that we can really find out the truth about these places.
Ukraine says it's killed Russia's general of nuclear defense in a bomb attack on a Moscow street. Kyiv says General Igor Kirillov was targeted over the use of banned chemical weapons in Russia's war on Ukraine. Separately, Ukraine's Special Operations Forces said it inflicted heavy damage on North Korean soldiers fighting alongside Russia, killing some 50 fighters in recent days in the Ukrainian-occupied Kursk region. In Madison, Wisconsin, a 15-year-old girl armed with a handgun opened fire inside a private Christian school Monday, killing a teacher and another teenager before fatally turning the gun on herself. Six others were wounded in Monday's assault. Police and paramedics were alerted by a second-grade student who dialed 911 to report the mass shooting. This is Murray Jen Charles, mother of three student survivors.
We always send prayers. We always send thoughts. And then when are we going to stop doing that? This is not okay. If your kids are at school, they are not okay. If they are at church, they are not okay. If they are outside, elsewhere, they are not okay. Where are they going to be safe?
As many as 1,360 children have never been reunited with their parents 6 years after the previous Trump administration forcibly separated them at the U.S.-Mexico border. That's according to a new report by Human Rights Watch, which also warns against the return to power of some of the key architects and enforcers of Trump's zero-tolerance immigration policy, which caused long-lasting harm and trauma to asylum-seeking families. The officials include Tom Homan, who has been nominated by Trump to serve as a so-called border czar. Human Rights Watch has urged the Senate to reject the appointment of any officials involved in the family separation policy, which the group says, quote, constituted enforced disappearance and may have constituted torture, they said. Here in New York, the judge overseeing Donald Trump's hush money and election interference criminal trial has refused to throw out Trump's conviction on 34 felony counts. Judge Juan Merchan rejected arguments by Trump's lawyers that Trump should not have been prosecuted because of the Supreme Court's July ruling that shields presidents from prosecution for official acts. Instead, Judge Merchan noted, Trump hadn't even been elected yet in 2016 and was therefore acting in an unofficial capacity when he falsified business records to cover up hush money payments made to adult film star Stormy Daniels. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is facing growing calls to step down after his finance minister quit amidst a public spat over how to respond to Trump's vow to impose a 25% tariff on Canadian goods. Chrystia Freeland, who was also Canada's deputy prime minister, has been replaced by longtime Trudeau ally Public Safety Minister Dominique LeBlanc, who recently joined Trudeau to dine with Trump at Mar-a-Lago, a meeting that notably did not include Freeland, the former head of the Financial Times. Embattled German Chancellor Olaf Scholz lost a no-confidence vote Monday, triggering an early election in February of next year. Friedrich Merz, head of the center-right Christian Democratic Union, is widely favored to win Germany's leadership, as polls also show the far-right could gain a record number of votes. In Brazil, authorities have arrested a military general and close ally of former President Jair Bolsonaro as part of the criminal investigation into attempted coup to overturn the results of the 2022 presidential election. Walter Braga Neto was Bolsonaro's running mate in his failed re-election bid, which Bolsonaro lost to President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva and served as defense minister. Bolsonaro and Neto are among 37 officials who were indicted in November over the coup plot. Neto's arrest Saturday came after Brazilian authorities accused him of obstructing the collection of evidence in their investigation. Back in the United States, workers at three Amazon facilities have authorized a strike, setting up a potential work stoppage at the height of the holiday season at warehouses in New York, Chicago, and Atlanta. The Teamsters Union says Amazon failed to come to the bargaining table by a deadline of December 15th. Amazon workers at a Staten Island warehouse here in New York became the first ever to win a union election in the U.S. back in March of 2022. This comes as a new investigation led by Senator Bernie Sanders finds Amazon systematically ignores and rejects recommended worker safety measures and deliberately misrepresents workplace injury data. And a federal judge in Florida Monday sentenced members of a Pan-Africanist group known as the Uhuru Three to 3 years probation, meaning they will avoid prison time in a legal saga that saw the anti-war activists targeted for their vocal criticism of U.S. policy. The members of the African People's Socialist Party were convicted in September of conspiring with the Russian government to sow discord and interfere in U.S. elections, which the accused have rejected as ridiculous. This is one of the Uhuru Three, Omali Yeshitela, speaking after the sentencing yesterday.
I want to say that the only reason this discussion is happening right now about free speech, and the judge was given an opportunity to make the rulings and make the statements that he made, the only reason he was given this opportunity is because we fought. If we had laid down, we wouldn't have had this discussion.
To see our interviews with Omali Yeshitela and our coverage of this case, go to democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, peace, and the presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden is facing fierce condemnation for granting clemency to former Pennsylvania judge Michael Conahan, one of two judges jailed in the notorious Kids for Cash scandal. In 2011, Conahan was sentenced to 17 and a half years for accepting nearly $3 million in kickbacks for sending 2,300 children, some as young as 8 years old, to for-profit prisons on false charges. On Friday, Pennsylvania's Democratic Governor Josh Shapiro criticized Biden's decision.
I do feel strongly that President Biden got it absolutely wrong and created a lot of pain here in northeastern Pennsylvania. This was not only a black eye on the community, the Kids for Cash scandal, but it also affected families in really deep and profound and sad ways. Some children took their lives because of this. Families were torn apart.
On Monday, Democracy Now! Spoke to Washington Post columnist Heather Long, who'd covered the Kids for Cash scandal as a reporter in Pennsylvania.
This was a huge mistake by President Biden to grant clemency, to reduce the sentence for Michael Conahan, the former judge from Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, who was one of the two judges involved in that really heinous Kids for Cash scandal. We're talking about sending thousands of kids to for-profit detention facilities, many of whom were first-time offenders who probably should have had community service or some sort of slap on the wrist. And instead, they were sent to a detention facility for months, in some cases years. So many negative consequences happened because of that, that many of those young people ended up depressed, addicted, didn't graduate high school, some lost scholarships. It was just a chain event of tragedy. And Michael Conahan willingly did this. He knew about it. He purposely blocked a county government facility being built so that these for-profit centers could be built. Some of the cash kickbacks were delivered as cash in a shoebox or routed through a Florida condo that he and the other judge set up to funnel money. I mean, there was just so much that was knowingly done that was wrong here, and then an attempt to stymie any attempts to stop it or any attempts to prosecute it. So it's just really hard for anybody who lived through this in Pennsylvania. I got my start there as a journalist to believe that President Biden could do this and, you know, would want to give this particular person who gave no one a second chance this kind of leniency.
That was Washington Post columnist Heather Long. Her new article is headlined, "Biden Gave Kids for Cash Judge Clemency. That's How Broken This Process Is," unquote. The scandal was the focus of the 2013 documentary Kids for Cash, directed by Robert May, who'll join us in a minute. This is the film's trailer.
She was a good kid. She was happy.
I was known for being the jokester.
Eddie, he was always a fireball.
We were talking about how funny it would be if we made a fake MySpace page about my vice principal.
I was trying to stay out of trouble. That's when everything started.
Whatever sins you have committed, you can't go back and undo it.
Chivarella was a no-nonsense, zero-tolerance judge. He always jailed kids.
You are going to experience prison. I'll be glad to put you there.
The way Chivarella ran the courtroom, you could have had F. Lee Bailey there, and the kids would have gone away.
There's a mechanism that takes over that keeps kids in that system.
No one listened because we were kids.
There was never any instance of guilt or innocence. They were locking him up.
Really high number of kids appearing without counsel.
We have no rights. He's in their custody now.
It is unbelievable. We're talking about children.
I wanted them to be scared out of their minds. I don't understand how that was a bad thing.
Former Luzerne County judge faces charges tonight
in a scandal known as Kids for Cash.
$2.6 million
in return for sentencing kids to juvenile detention.
I never sent a kid away for a penny. I'm not this mad judge who was just putting them in shackles, throwing kids away.
He went there as a free-spirited kid. He came out a hardened man, I'd say.
Here I was saying we can trust that judge to be fair, and that's not what happened.
I was scared every day.
I was only 14. All those years I missed.
This is not a cash for kids case.
I still wake up from nightmares.
The trailer from the film Kids for Cash, directed by Robert May. He's joining us from Pittston, Pennsylvania. And in Harveys Lake, Pennsylvania, we're joined by Sandy Fonzo, the other judge involved in the Cash for Kids scandal, Mark Chivarella, sentenced Sandy's 17-year-old boy to 30 days in a juvenile boot camp for a minor charge of having drug paraphernalia. At the time, Ed was a star wrestler in high school. Sandy Fonzo says her son's sentence started him on a path to the adult court system that culminated in his death by suicide. Robert May and Sandy Fonzo, welcome to Democracy Now! And I also, even before we start with Sandy's story, I want to give out the suicide hotline number. It's 988. Whenever we deal with suicide, it's so important for people to know that there are people to talk to. Sandy Fonzo, take us back in time. Talk about what happened to Ed.
This is very emotional, very heavy, just hearing and having to relive all of this. I mean, this is just reopened wounds that have never healed. And this is very, very difficult, very, very heavy. I shouldn't be having to relive this, especially at Christmas time. I mean, this is just, it's unacceptable.
I'm so sorry, Sandy, that we are asking you to do this. You have been so incredibly brave in talking about this over the years. And I'm so sorry this has been all reopened for you at this moment with President Biden's pardon of one of the judges. So
I need to talk about it. I need to defend my son because he's not here to defend himself. And I am his mother and I always will be. So I appreciate being here and getting to talk to you. It's just very difficult for me.
It just shows how brave you are. So if you could take us back in time and explain what happened for people who don't know Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, and what happened, why did your son end up in court to begin with?
My son did nothing more than anything that most of us as kids did, experimenting and living his life and making mistakes that we usually all get to just learn and evolve and grow from. He did nothing more than be at an underage drinking party with tons of other kids, but he was caught. And he went in front of Judge Civarella because this is the process that they had. And, you're trusting in this system that, this is the good for our kids. And I was told this is, just to scare him, to get him back on track, to make sure, everything is well. And he went into the county juvenile detention center for a month. And in that time, he wanted nothing more. He understood. And what he was missing in his life, he just wanted to get back home. He wanted to get back. It was his senior year about to begin. He wanted to get back into his wrestling training, just get back into his life. And I had the teachers, I had his coaches, myself talking and sending letters to the judge's chambers of my son's character and explaining all of this. And I was 100% sure there was no doubt in my mind that when we went in front of that judge, my son was coming home with me that day, but that didn't happen. And he was sent to that juvenile detention center in Pittston. And I believe it was like 8 months. He lost his senior year. He never had the chance to wrestle again. Any chance that he had for a scholarship. He came out of there very bitter, very angry, pent up with anger. He couldn't look you in the eye. I don't know what happened in that facility. My son was a very big, strong, proud boy. He came out broken. I don't know what happened. I try to not think about what happened, and he would never talk about it, but something not good happened to him in there. And it snowballed. He just never recovered. He got into a fight and had to go back into the court system. And actually, those charges were dropped. They were not found. But because he was on probation from Judge Civarella, he sent him away again even though he was found not guilty of those charges. And this time he was sent to their other for-profit center, which was 5 hours from our home. It was in Western Pennsylvania near Pittsburgh. And he did a year there, and then was released if he would do this boot camp, which he excelled, and they couldn't talk more good about my son and his character and the discipline that he showed. But it just never ended. It just snowballed. It changed him. It broke him. It stole his youth, his childhood. He would never, ever recover. And it just became too much. And he shot himself in the heart. And we were fighting this. We knew something was not right. We could not get into that courtroom with media. Anything that was trying to be done was shot down. Judge Lacuda tried to step up, and she was ousted and thrown out of the court. These judges had this power, and they did what they wanted, and they started their own for-profit centers. And at the time, Judge Conahan was the president judge. So he appointed his friend, Michael Civarella, as the juvenile judge, who he knew would send these kids into the system, and they funneled them in and collected the money for every bed that was filled. And until this money line was seen, that's when the feds stepped in and all of this came out.
And it was
out.
Exposed that they were getting kickbacks from these for-profit jails. Sandy, I wanted to go back to when you confronted the former judge, now jail, Judge Civarella, outside the courtroom after your son's sentencing.
My kid's not here. He's dead because of him. He ruined my f-ing life. I'd like him to go to hell and rot there forever.
Ma'am, come on.
No, you know what he told everybody in court? They need to be held accountable for their actions. You need to be. Do you remember me? Do you remember me? Do you remember my son, an all-star wrestler? He's gone. He shot himself in the heart. You scumbag.
So that was Sandy Fonzo confronting former Judge Civarella, who remains in jail outside the courtroom after her son's sentencing. Now, the man that President Biden pardoned is the president judge, as you describe, Sandy, is Judge Conahan. When you heard about this pardoning, your response?
I was working. I was in my car and my phone was just going off. And I don't know. I was in disbelief. I was in shock. You would think nothing could ever shock me again, but I was numb. I mean, I just pulled over and sat there trying to understand what was going on and how something like this could happen.
I want to bring Robert May into this. Robert May is the director and producer of the documentary Kids for Cash. If your past films are The War Tapes, the Oscar-winning Fog of War, the first two episodes of your five-part docuseries, Bucks County, USA, will premiere at the Sundance Film Festival this January. When you heard about the judge's pardon, Robert May, about President Biden's pardon, your response, and explain the relationship of these two judges, where Conahan was in Florida, and what exactly this means, and where Civarella is today.
Well, I was obviously shocked. I felt that Judge Civarella was sentenced to 28 years in prison, and Michael Conahan was sentenced to 17 and a half years in prison. And the difference in the length of time was primarily because of Civarella did not acknowledge his full involvement in the scandal. They both did take money for the building of the two centers, but it quickly became known as the Kids for Cash, where they were accused of taking money for each kid that was put in the system, which isn't exactly what happened. And so Civarella started to defend himself vehemently, and Conahan more or less kept his mouth shut, and Civarella did not. And then they had agreed to spend 7 years in prison, and they the judge at the time, Judge Kosick, didn't accept their plea deal. And primarily because Chiarella wouldn't take responsibility for what he did do, although he said he did acknowledge the financial crimes, but he didn't want to be labeled as the Kids for Cash
Robert
judge.
May, they made millions of dollars for putting these kids away for the use of these two facilities.
They made the money was actually tracked in the way that they did it was the facilities were built by a builder that was a friend of Judge Chiarella's and was financed by a friend that was a friend of Conahan's. And so they put the whole thing together. It's true that there was a new facility needed. It's also true that, to the best of our knowledge, that the county wasn't going to build a new facility, or at least at that time. So it made it very easy for them to create this new facility. At the time, for-profit prisons and detention centers were something that was becoming more in favor. So that's where it all began. And Chiarella, who sent kids away at very high rates during his entire term as the juvenile court judge, it seemed to make sense that they would have the facility more full than not, just based on his actual track record.
So I think they were found guilty of accepting $2.8 million in illegal payments. And I misspoke. It wasn't that Conahan, the president judge, was pardoned. He was granted clemency, right? He was one of the many people who was considered to have committed nonviolent crimes. And during COVID, as an older man, he was released to home. And now he was granted clemency by President Biden, along with the 1,500 other people.
That's right. Right. He had about two more years to go, I think, on his sentence. One thing that's lost in all this, which Sandy can attest to, is that, you know, kids need special care and treatment. When they're growing up, they have lots of issues now more than ever, and literally now more than ever today. But back when this story all took place, I spent a lot of time with Sandy and the other kids and families, and it had changed my life than the way, and I have children. The juvenile justice system was broken then, it's broken now. The way that the difficulty in getting mental health for kids, it's problematic and it's susceptible to the power of the courts. And I think that is one of the things that isn't talked enough about. We had another kid that we followed, Charlie Ball Savage, who was doing well. He tried. He struggled. And he also was jailed for a long period of time. And he missed his prom, he missed birthdays, and he missed so many things. And he never got the attention and care that he needed. Instead, he was locked up. And eventually, he died of a drug overdose because he never got the care he ultimately needed and deserved.
Well, Robert May, I want to thank you for being with us. It makes you question whether these are nonviolent crimes these judges engaged in, putting away thousands of children, some as young as 8 years old. Robert May, director of the documentary Kids for Cash. And Sandy, thank you for taking this time and, most importantly, sharing in this very painful moment for you with everyone. It is a warning to all what you had to say today. Sandy Fonzo's son, sentenced in the Kids for Cash scandal, ultimately took his own life. To go back to Democracy Now!'s coverage 10 years ago of the Kids for Cash scandal, you can go to democracynow.org. And again, the suicide hotline is 988. Coming up, as President Biden enters his final month in office, we'll talk to Astrid Taylor of the Debt Collective about how Biden could deliver debt relief to millions of student borrowers. Then we'll look at a new film called The Bibi Tapes. Why can't it be played in Israel? It's about Netanyahu, who's on trial for corruption. Stay with us.
Everybody leaving.
Taking Time by The Creation. Producer Shel Talmy passed away in November at the age of 87. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. As President Biden enters his final month in office, he's facing calls to grant more debt relief to millions of student borrowers. According to the White House, the Biden administration's approved $175 billion in student debt relief for nearly 5 million borrowers over the past 4 years. But advocacy groups, including the Debt Collective, have urged Biden to support broader debt relief before Donald Trump returns to the White House. The Debt Collective recently launched a campaign to pressure the Biden White House to cancel student debt for older student debtors. This is an excerpt from a video produced by the Debt Collective.
President Biden still has full authority to free elders of these debts before Trump takes power.
The only thing that's standing between us and student loan relief is political will.
I think the broken system is what put us here. Advocating for myself and the other people in the Debt Collective is the reason I am here.
We give billionaires a slap on the wrist and bail them out. It's time to bail out struggling working people.
If Biden doesn't use his powers, millions will die in debt.
There's going to be an army of seniors who are having their Social Security garnished for their student loans, and that social safety net that's been in place for so long, people are going to be in poverty.
There is a provision, federal claims collection provision 902.2, that will allow the president to eliminate the debt even if there are legal challenges. And so we're here to let the senators know about it.
Federal claims provision 902.2 allows government agencies to cancel debt based on the debtor's age. Essentially, the federal government knows these debts will never be paid and will simply be discharged when people pass away.
It is the right thing to do, especially for older debtor. It's the right thing to do.
A new video from the Debt Collective. We're joined now by Astra Taylor, co-founder of the collective. Her new piece for The Nation is headlined, "It's Still Not Too Late for Biden to Deliver Debt Relief." She's also a filmmaker and author of several books. Astra, we only have a few minutes. This is such a critical issue right now. Explain what you're saying Biden has it in his power to do. You're going to the White House in a few days once again to talk to the folks there.
Yes, this is a titanic moment for the Biden administration. They have crashed into the authoritarian iceberg of the Trump administration, and it is their duty to fill as many lifeboats as possible, to do what they can to protect us on multiple fronts. Student debt relief is the one I know well. There are many legal mechanisms, long-established legal authorities, that the Biden administration can use to issue group discharges for people who have ironclad claims to debt relief. This is work the Biden administration should have done on day one, make no mistake. But as we have a limited number of days, they need to get to work and do this. You know, we're pushing against stereotypes. There's the stereotype of the student debtor as privileged, right, as upwardly mobile. The fact is that the vast majority of student debtors, especially the people in the most distress, went to for-profit colleges, where they are systematically defrauded. I hear a very deep resonance with the previous guest. And when you turn over public goods to the profit motive, terrible things happen. So these are schools that target vulnerable borrowers, first-generation students, single parents, veterans, disabled folks, and bury them in debt for worthless degrees. These people have strong claims, and the Biden administration has a backlog of over 400,000 applications for debt relief for these folks. And Senator Edward Markey and Dick Durbin and 70 other representatives have signed a letter saying cancel the debt for these folks. And then there are also older debtors who, contrary to stereotypes, are the fastest growing demographic of student debtors. Every quarter, there are more and more older folks in debt. People are aging into their student loans, not aging out. 9 million older debtors over the age of 50 owe $400 billion. They're going to get relief when they die. Not to be morbid, but it's coming. Why not let them retire in dignity by canceling this debt? Because we know once Trump is in office, their hopes are dashed.
So explain that, how Trump is in office. Project 2025 and the far right push against student debt relief. Talk about what their plan is. And President Biden saying he tried, but courts stopped him.
It's, you know, unfortunately, the Democrats have set the Republicans up for success. We've been organizing since the Occupy Wall Street era, pushing first for for-profit borrowers and then broadening our demands out for student debtors more broadly with the horizon of total student loan abolition and free college for all. We think college needs to be free as in price and free as in aimed at freedom. It's a public good. Unfortunately, the Democrats have only sort of tweaked at the margins, are, you know, very insistent on making individuals file for relief one by one instead of tackling this issue. And we saw this, we've seen this movie before. We were organizing under the Obama administration, and what we saw was that student debtors were thrown to the wolves. And that, the first time around, Donald Trump made very clear that it was his priority to stop student debt relief and to also embolden the for-profit college industry. And you, we're seeing right now, in advance of January 20th, when he takes power, we're seeing the stock of those for-profit education companies going up. So we, Project 2025 is very clear that they want to end student debt cancellation, that they want to privatize public education. And in fact, we won't be talking about abolishing student loans. We'll be talking about abolishing the Department of Education. And so it's extremely serious. You know, people need to keep organizing. That's what the Debt Collective is going to do as the, you know, in the years ahead. But right now, it is incumbent on the Biden administration that they fill those lifeboats, that they grant clemency to debtors who have done nothing wrong and whose lives are being destroyed.
The Biden administration has granted some $175 billion in student debt relief to about 5 million borrowers. Mm-hmm. But you say in The Nation that even these numbers are deceiving.
Yeah, these numbers are deceiving. Well, first off, much of this debt relief was issued through programs that already existed that they fixed to some degree, for example, public service loan forgiveness or income-driven repayment programs. But these were pre-existing mechanisms that the government should make work. I mean, public service loan forgiveness is actually a George W. Bush era program. So while we cheer every instance of debt cancellation for nurses, for teachers, for other public servants, it's the bare minimum. And unfortunately, sometimes the reality doesn't match the press release. So there was a big to-do about debt cancellation for students from Corinthian colleges, which is something we've been working on for a decade. The fact is that over 100,000 people have not actually gotten that promised relief. So there is a real problem with implementation, with matching deeds with words with the Democrats. And I think it's actually a parable about the problems with how the Democrats govern more broadly. You know, this speaks to a bigger problem than just student debt relief, which is having the courage of your convictions, actually governing to the full ability of your authorities. Again, there's a Swiss Army knife of legal tools that the Biden administration can use to cancel debt relief. They should be using them all as boldly as they can.
So what are they telling you at the White House? You've been there several times.
Well, we've been told that for-profit debtors in particular have strong, irrefutable claims to debt relief. So that makes us wonder, well, then where is it? Again, a backlog of 400,000 applications and many more people who are defrauded by these schools. We have seen the headlines that said that in the administration's final sprint that student debt relief is a priority. We're going to try to keep pushing them to make that happen. People should call the representatives, call the White House, say that this is important. And it's important in part because it's one of the things that can't be undone. Once that debt cancellation is delivered to the people who deserve it, it's going to be there. It's going to change their lives.
We're in a very unusual climate right now where you have the alleged assassin of the head of United Health, the United Health CEO. You have him being hailed a hero by some because it has opened up this enormous backlash, outcry against the health industry and insurance. Do you see student debt in the same way?
Absolutely. The Debt Collective is a union of debtors, and we organize across debt types. We also organize with medical debtors who are pushing for public universal health care. We are also organizing renters who are pushing for a model of housing provision that's not based on profit. So we see these debt types as all connected, and many student debtors have medical debt. In fact, 100 million people in this country have medical debt. And that's part of why people are so frustrated, right? That's part of why people are using this moment to express their frustration with systems that profit from people's pain, their sickness, their poverty. And so this this is something that we've been organizing around, doing different campaigns for medical debt relief. But this is urgent.
We only have a minute to go. In this last month that President Biden is in office, you're saying he should use this moment to support a number of issues, including abortion funds around the country. Explain.
Yes, the debt collective this week just announced that we're erasing $50,000 of abortion debt, which is a horrible phrase that people probably never heard before, but it's becoming a reality post-Dobbs, which is the decision that overturned Roe v. Wade. So without a constitutionally enshrined right to abortion, what's happening? There are fewer opportunities for care because providers are being shut down. And so people are having to travel further, which can cost $1,500, $1,600, $2,000 to travel. So abortion funds are in crisis. And what we're hearing anecdotally is that providers are saying, put your abortion on a payday loan, put on a credit card, borrow money from your family. So this is something that this is a new dimension to the crisis of reproductive health justice. We believe abortion debt is medical debt. It should all be abolished. Abortion is health care. Health care should be free. And that the Biden administration should do what it can to pardon abortion providers in advance of the Trump administration.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us. Astra Taylor, co-founder and organizer of the Debt Collective, will link to your piece in The Nation. It's still not too late for Biden to deliver debt relief. Coming up, the Bibi Files, as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is on trial for corruption. We'll look at this new film with the film's Oscar-winning producer, Alex Gibney. Stay with us. By Bella Fleck, Zakir Hussain, and Edgar Meyer. Hussain passed away Sunday at the age of 73. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The official death toll in Gaza has topped 45,000. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is fighting a different battle inside Israeli courts. The first sitting Israeli prime minister to face criminal charges, he's finally taking the stand at his long-running corruption trial. The case has gone on for years. He's charged with fraud, breach of trust, accepting bribes in three separate cases. We turn now to an extraordinary new documentary that offers an in-depth look into the charges against Netanyahu, featuring leaked footage of police interrogations of Netanyahu himself, his wife, Sarah, and those accused of bribing him. This is the trailer to the Bibi Files.
Our first question for you is whether you or any of your family members have received any gifts or favors from wealthy businessmen in the last decade.
This is preposterous and insane. You're trying to incriminate the prime minister on nonsense.
Case, the facts are really simple. The prime minister and his wife are getting gifts.
It's a total lie.
And on the other side, Netanyahu did favors.
We must find a way to reward him.
What do you need to reward the prime minister for?
Government officials are not allowed to take gifts. This is corruption. The police, they investigated everybody.
If this comes out, I'm dead.
What did you get?
Champagne, cigars, shalsheret, tabak.
Sarah Netanyahu is very important. Both of them never surrendered, never compromised.
My husband is the strongest prime minister we've ever had.
They start to believe that they are untouchable.
after the catastrophe of the 7th of October, the war became another instrument to stay in power.
When people serve for too long, it gets into their head.
The indictment made him dependent on the extreme right in Israel.
He's now captive to their whims.
This is nonsense.
Put all Israel in the turmoil.
Netanyahu is the architect of chaos.
He survived in a state of war. He survived in a state of instability.
It's not a cover-up.
He tried to kill the system.
Nobody is above the law.
Do you remember that line from The Godfather?
Keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer.
That's the trailer for the Bibi Files, leaked secret footage of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The new documentary, The Bibi Files, is directed by Alexis Bloom and produced by Alex Gibney. The Bibi Files cannot be legally distributed in Israel due to privacy laws. For more, we're joined by filmmaker Alex Gibney. In 2008, he won an Oscar for his film Taxi to the Dark Side, about an Afghan man who was tortured in prison at Bagram. Thanks so much for being with us again, Alex. I went to see this film the other night at the theater. This is powerful. Explain why in this trailer we can't see Netanyahu's face in these deposition tapes. And how did you get these deposition tapes when he, his wife, his son Yair, and others are being questioned by police?
Okay, I'll answer the. Hi, Amy. I'll answer the questions in reverse. I was leaked these tapes. They're interrogation videotapes done by the police that were a precursor to the indictment of Netanyahu on corruption charges. And in the tapes, you can see Netanyahu, his wife Sara, his son Yair, and many of the people who attempted to bribe Netanyahu. I thought they were explosive. And very important. This, by the way, was before 10/7 or the war on Gaza. This is when there was a big crisis over the judicial reform attempts by Netanyahu, which, of course, were done in part so he could elude any consequence from, impending bribery charges. But the key thing to understand about distribution in Israel is when I got these leaked tapes, I made a promise to the source that I would not distribute the film in Israel because the source could go to prison. There are privacy laws that make it mandatory that if you are photographed as part of an official proceeding, i.e. a police interrogation, you can't cause those videotapes to be released. So unless you get the permission of Netanyahu and Sarah, et cetera, which wasn't going to happen. So anyway, that is the occasion of why these things can't be, this film can't be released, and why we had to, black bar the trailer in order so that the trailer wouldn't be freely visible. I couldn't cause the trailer to be freely visible in Israel, though I should say that it's being widely pirated there.
So Netanyahu is going after you?
Netanyahu, as soon as it was announced that we were going to premiere at the Toronto Film Festival, he went to an Israeli court and tried to stop the screening in Toronto. Now, how that was going to happen, I don't know. But in any event, it was denied. But he certainly tried to stop us. And I understand the Netanyahu administration, through a number of mechanisms, are trying very hard to go after a guy named Raviv Drucker, who's one of the producers of the film and is a longtime Israeli journalist who has an expertise in this kind of corruption, has been the bane of a number of prime ministers, but particularly Netanyahu.
Let's go to another clip from the Bibi Files. It begins with Ami Ayalon, the former head of Israel's internal security service, Shin Bet.
And after the catastrophe of the 7th of October, the war became another instrument to stay in power. He survived in a state of war. He survived in a state of instability. He survived when we fight each other. He survived when our enemies fight each other.
A forever war is beneficial to Netanyahu. This makes people feel like they are always in danger, like they always need him. There is always some huge threat. I think that that helps him remain prime minister.
That last voice, the young Israeli woman, Gili Schwartz, is from Kibbutz Be'eri, where more than 100 people were killed on October 7th last year. Alex, if you can elaborate on what they are saying. I mean, as we speak, Netanyahu is in court in Israel right now. What this means, they say he wants to wage wider war because otherwise he's no longer going to be protected by the prime ministership, by being prime minister.
That's right. I mean, I think, strictly speaking, this is a film about corruption, and it starts with petty corruption, being bribed with gifts and cigars, champagne, jewelry. But then the ultimate corruption is how he's tried to elude a reckoning for his misdeeds. And in so doing, he wraps himself in the mantle of prime minister and then wages endless war. Now, I can't think of really anything more corrupt than somebody who is administering the killing of women and children in order to be able to stay in power. But that is what they are alleging, and that is what the film is about.
Let's go to another clip from the BB Files. This one begins with Prime Minister Netanyahu addressing the U.S. Congress this past July.
Together we shall defend our common civilization. Together we shall secure a brilliant future for both our nations.
Well, I would say that tragically, the Americans don't know how to call him out. There was no plan for ending the war of Gaza, bringing the hostages home, and changing dynamics in the region. And things only got worse. Netanyahu is the architect of chaos. And as we speak, when all eyes are on the front in Gaza and the front in Lebanon, he is implementing his plan in the West Bank with the extreme right. He may create a situation where it's irreversible.
And that's Nimrod Novick, former advisor to Shimon Peres in the BB Files, the documentary produced by Alex Gibney, who's with us now. So talk about how this trial plays out right now. I think most people in the United States aren't even aware. I mean, you have the horror in Gaza. You have what's now taking place in Syria, what's happening in Lebanon. Explain how this all fits in.
Well, this is a trial that's been going on for 4 years. Netanyahu has been trying to elude a reckoning related to these charges for that much time. And what he constantly does is to wrap himself in the mantle of leadership. And so what better way to do that? And this is a tried and true political formula, as grisly and as grotesque as it is to wage war, is to continue to use weapons and say we're in danger of being annihilated, so we must strike back. But I mean, the destruction that's going on in Gaza, for example, is a kind of wanton destruction at this point that is just beyond any kind of moral reckoning. So I think that also the United States bears some responsibility for this. That's why we included those clips of him at the Congress. You know, we supply Israel with so much aid and so much.
And to be clear, Sada, his wife, and when she's being questioned, she yells at the police and says, do you know how he's treated in the United States when he addresses a joint session of Congress? Alex Gibney, we're going to have to leave it there. Academy Award-winning filmmaker and producer of The BB Files. His next film is about Luigi Mangione and the shooting of the UnitedHealthcare CEO. I'm Amy Goodman. Happy birthday, Jeff Stout.
This ain't Monkey Wrench by Foo Fighters. This isn't actually an ad for my new show.
You want to join me, Zach, every Saturday at 8 p.m. for your favorite 90s hits, throwbacks, and deep cuts. We'll be playing you songs like this all night from 8 to 9 p.m. So join me as I take you to the 90s.
I'm stoked. You stoked?
I'm stoked.
Just
I'm
so stoked.
Ready?
Yeah.